Welcome to the Midlife Masculine Podcast. I'm Dhruv Sethi. As men, we reach an inflection point in our lives where we question our achievements. Despite societal expectations and our own credentials, many of us feel unfulfilled. I have lived in three countries, built a career in finance, achieved several academic and professional qualifications, but I know there's still more to life, just like most men today. Join me as I invite guests to share wisdom so that we men become self-sovereign in mind, body, and spirit, all with a spiritual undertone. Welcome to another episode of the Midlife Masculine Podcast. Aiden Lee uses martial arts to help dads build a warrior's physique and Zen work-life balance so that they can lead their families by example. Since 2015, Aiden has run Fit Roots, which is a program using the best of martial arts, particularly kickboxing, philosophy, and functional strength training. Aiden created the Fit Roots Modern Warrior Transformation to unlock the support men need to transform physically, mentally, and spiritually so that they can receive the guidance that is missing from the modern world. Welcome, Aiden.
Thank you so much, Dhruv. It's great to be here.
So you're in Sri Lanka right now. How's that?
Yeah, it's great. It's amazing. I didn't tell you actually before the call. I am actually of Sri Lankan origin mostly. So even though I was born in the UK, it was nice to finally come back here and actually experience it as if I am a local.
Nice. And are you able to eat the very spicy food there?
Yeah, I've actually been having it since I was a kid. So I'm very much used to it. And yeah, it's super tasty. And it's actually quite healthy as well if you do it right. So I'm fortunate to not put on too much weight as well.
That's good, man. That's good. So, helping dads build a warrior's physique. First question, dads in their midlife after they've had a few kids, is it even possible?
good question. I'm not quite in my midlife, so I'll use myself and some of my students as an example because they are more in their midlife. But just for myself, first of all, it is 100% possible. I've been close to death. And I've also been as close as possible to an athlete or a fighter's level of conditioning when I was competing. So I know both ends of the spectrum when it comes to health. One being I feel super fit, super healthy, ready to go to war and fight. And on the other end, bedbound and not even able to do much and just about functioning. So to answer your question, yes, it's possible. Sure, I am in my early 30s, I have a few kids. But when you start to get into your 40s and beyond, it's not impossible. It just becomes harder, but you have to be more strategic about it. And that's the thing. You can't go and train like a 20-year-old or your former 20-year-old self. You have to think more about how can I train to prevent injury? How can I train to optimize my hormones, like whatever testosterone is left, your stress hormones, and how everything else is integrated inside the body. And especially things like your posture and your movement patterns, because this will help you to, again, reduce the injury, but it will also help you to build more functional muscle in a way where you're actually working with your body rather than working against it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. A few questions off the back of that. So men in their midlife, and you said that the training and the nature training, all of that changes. Do they have to put in more hours to get the same results, or is it just slightly different in the way they train?
Yeah, sometimes you would think you would have to put in more hours to get results that may have come easier to you in your younger years, right? But I think it's actually the opposite. You want to do less, but make sure it's correct. And when I say correct, there's actually a few things. It's also making sure you have the correct type of training, which we can get into, the correct form and technique, and then also the correct intensity as well. So if you combine those three things, then you can get pretty good results. In most of my students train somewhere between 30 to 45 minutes a day. So they're not, you know, looking to become professional fighters or professional bodybuilders. Clearly, that's not my build either. But they are looking to, as we said at the start, to lead themselves first and then their family by example. And to do that, they're busy, they've got careers or businesses, and they can't afford to spend hours a day in the gym. So it's important that there's a system that can be followed, which can be done in 30, 45 minutes a day max.
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of combat sports. But how have you seen your clients changing as a result of learning just some basic moves?
Yeah, I'll give you an example of one of my students, Jamie. He's he listens to this, I'll have to correct me, but I think he's 45 or 46 off the top of my head. So he is well into his midlife. And the interesting thing about him is before he started with me, he had never really been in shape. So he had lived through his prime years, his 20s, his 30s, and never actualized his physical and you could say mental potential in that time. But in just 12 weeks of working together, he lost, I think, 13 kilos. So just over a kilo a week. And when you look at it like that, if he can do it, why can't anyone else? And yes, to lose that much weight in that time frame, he was fairly large built in terms of his belly and so on. But this is very typical of the modern male today, right? So we have to think, well, what are the average or typical issues that the modern man is facing? And how can someone like myself and you, how can we help them overcome these things? So if we can do that and put those things into place, then it makes it much easier for them as well.
Just maybe give an example of a strategy, just at a high level.
Sure. So I mentioned roughly about the time frames as well. So I will try and explain this in a very simple way when it comes to optimizing the kind of training and how you can reduce injury risk, which means you should focus on this set type of training. So basically what you see when you go to the gym is most people will do a version of bodybuilding or CrossFit style training, which especially tends to mean they either work one joint at a time, like you're doing a bicep curl, for example, or you're doing some Olympic lifts, which require lots of mobility and lots of strength and basically practice as well. But when you do this kind of training, when you do the single joint kind of training, like bicep curls, tricep extensions, and so on, you end up putting too much load on those joints. Now, as you get older, as you know, your joints start to creak a bit more, you feel a bit more in pain, and you know, things don't function as well as they used to. Now, let's take almost the opposite end of that, the Olympic lifts, like CrossFit style and stuff. They put so much pressure on the joints that we want to try and avoid those kind of things. So how can we find a middle ground? Well, this is where I prefer to go for a principles first approach. And I often quote or paraphrase, you know, the great Bruce Lee here is like, you need to take what's useful and discard what is not, and then make what is left over uniquely your own. In order to do that, what can we look at as a first principle is that as a human, we have three movements we need to really optimize. So one is, well, there's four, but let's talk three movement ones. One is walking, one is running, and then the other is throwing. So if we use these as the principles to base our movements on, then that means we must train a certain way. So there's no good doing like isolation exercise like this, like bicep curls and so on, which are going to put your joints into extra stress. We want to be doing whole body movements, which take less time, which work all the joints at once. And this is effectively, from a training perspective, how you can fit that into 30 to 45 minutes a day. And just to add to that is those movements should be primarily rotational, because when you're walking, running, and throwing, guess what? Rotation is the main mode of or plane of movement. Just like when you're throwing a punch in martial arts or a kick, depending on which one it is, but even straight line kicks, they have the same principle. There is some push and pull motion. Something fires off, something pulls back. And that's how you can generate more power with less body weight if you understand your movement patterns. So to really just answer your question is, if we can optimize this first principle of standing, walking, running, and throwing, we have less injury, we have better results with less stress on the body, and it can be done in less time as well.
So each of your sessions would incorporate those three basic movements then?
Yeah, exactly. What I mean by that is we're optimizing for those movements. So we're not going to necessarily walk, run, and throw. Like, there's not really much walking, running in the session. But what I mean by that is, for example, let's say we want to do something which is push related. Typically, people would do a bench press. Okay, guys say, I need to do a bench press to get a big chest and be strong and be able to push. Well, actually, what if you just did a weighted punch instead using a pulley machine or a dumbbell, depending on what you've got? And that would train that push and pull system. And it would also help you to get stronger, but without the injuries.
Nice. That makes sense, actually. You did say that a fourth movement as well. What would that be?
Yeah, so the standing was, I didn't really mention that because it's more of a static movement. So as in you're just standing there. But what I mean by that is that if you optimize your posture and it's in its prime position, well, when it comes to even the food you eat, it'll be absorbed better because there's less stress and tension on the body. being pulled in different or incorrect directions and misalignments and so on. So if you're able to optimize your posture, then it makes the walking, the running, and the throwing easier. So they all come together. One is static, the standing, and the other three are dynamic.
All right, makes sense. And you also incorporate Zen work-life balance into your workout. So explain how you incorporate that.
Yeah, so work-life balance is, as a dad myself, but also with a lot of my students being dads, and a lot of people probably listening to this are busy professionals, guys, or maybe even dads as well. You don't have all that time to work out. But one of the biggest things I've noticed with working with guys and dads in particular is that you have less time than you think, but also more. So it's a bit of a paradox. So what I mean by this is one of the things that we do, which is very important, everyone can do this. You can just do it very simply now. I can explain how. Everyone should do a time, what we call like a time audit. And this will help you to understand how you spend your 168 hours in the week. Because the main excuse we have as guys trying to get into shape is, I don't have enough time. But what does that really mean? It means that my focus is elsewhere. My focus is on, if we have a family, typically family, and work. But we have to ask ourselves, which order of priority do we have things in? Now, if you ask most guys, especially if they have a family, they will say, oh, my family, not always, but most will say, oh, my family is my number one. And then it's work, and then it's me, or something like that. Two and three may be the other way around, but typically it's family, work, and then themselves. But their actions, and if you look at their time, don't necessarily align with that. Meaning that, for example, they spend an incredible amount of time working, but not much time connecting with their family or much time focusing on themselves. So what we try to do instead is through various mental missions and exercises, is we look at how you can possibly reframe that. So you could spend not as much time as you work. We understand that work is a big part of life, but you can spend more quality connected time with your family, and you flip that self-worth to being position number one. Because if you do that, then you can understand that your family will receive you in your best way possible, because you bring your best physical, mental, and spiritual self to the table each day. And then therefore, when you are with them, you're more present, you're less frustrated, you don't take your stress out on them, because you put that into your training. You've put that into your own self-development. So when we talk about Zen work-life balance, this is what we're referring to. Your work should be an extension of your best self. It shouldn't be a drain of you so that you come back home and you leave the broken pieces to your family, and you leave the bits which, you know, they're just trying to pick up the pieces from you. It should be the best of you that you bring back to yourself and to your family later.
Absolutely. And it does apply to men and women both. But perhaps for men, the responsibility of maintaining structure lies on the masculine. So I do think men have to look into themselves first and provide that structure for the rest of family, rest of society. You do talk about a quiet war on men. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, good question. I think more people are talking about this now, which makes it less quiet, but it has become, like yourself and, you know, your podcast and your purpose of it. But men today are not really men as we could be. And I know many will say, oh, we're not men as we should be, which is also true as well. But what does it come down to is they're not really fulfilling their masculine potential. And typically that comes into all areas as well. Now, most men nowadays will still say, oh, I provide and, you know, I work and this and that. But I think the simplest way to look at it from a physical health perspective is that you cannot possibly produce your best self at work, even in terms of if you're just looking at finances and ROI or whatever you do for work, whether it's something like sales where you can directly track it, or you're just doing something else, which is a little bit harder to track, but you can understand that maybe you could elevate your career or your business faster by just being in shape and being in health, in much better health. So if you look around in society around you today, you could look at the stats for this, but you could just go take a walk out in London where you live and see, you know, when you look around, do you see optimal men around you more than not? And typically the answer is not, right? So going back to this quiet war of men is that we've accepted that it's still okay to act as if we are providing and that is our main thing to do, just to provide. But we're not even doing that to the best of our abilities because we're not in good health. So there are different ways, or shall we say, like, if we look at it in a martial arts sense, different ways these attacks are coming at us at men. But, you know, I'm not too concerned with those. If you want to discuss them, we can. But I'm more concerned with how we receive those attacks. Just like in martial arts, you're going to get punched in the face. But it's up to you how you evade that, how you block it, how you counterattack it. There will always be attacks. But it's up to you how you do that.
Yeah, for sure. Taking that analogy a step further, the attacks from all walks of life right now on men, from a legal point of view, getting married for men is a bigger risk than reward. I mean, there's so much more to lose for men than women. And you walk in a workplace, it's, I don't know if it's equal anymore sometimes. And I think there was a statistic out sometime back in the US where if you look at the salaries of men, they're definitely earning a bit more than women. But if you take that as a ratio of time, the amount of money you make per hour on an hourly basis is way less than women. So yeah, the attacks, you're getting punches, so to speak, from all angles.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's just one of the many ways, right? And that's a, you very vividly explained how that works. So, you know, and I think if you look at that as well, if we take this up maybe one level higher, is that really what's happening is that men and women are being pitted against one another when in essence we should be working together. And one thing that I've realized having a family is that, you know, I personally, I didn't want to get married. My wife didn't really care about it either. She listens to us, she'll know we kind of just did it for tax reasons and other things, so we just did it. But it's, and I'm glad I have a wife like that, she's great. But point being is that we are being pitted against one another rather than being seen as a unison which comes together to bring out the best in one another, which she has things that I can't possibly do, and she has gifts and abilities that I cannot possibly fulfill to our family, to our children, and just as a woman in her own right as well. And similarly, I also have mine too. And the idea is that it's not that I should be better than her, more able, more this, more that. It's not a competition. And that's the problem, is that if we look at this masculine, feminine, you know, feminism and all this stuff, it's like, well, we've got the wrong end of the picture. We're actually just trying to see how we can understand who's better than one another, when we should be looking at, well, how can we actually just work together to bring out the natural union between us?
Yeah, 100%. Men and women are not the enemies. The establishment are. The World Economic Forum and the elites, so to speak, are the real enemies.
Yeah, but that's the strategy, isn't it? It's like, all right, we can put the scapegoat in there and say, all right, men need to fight against women, and that will ignore who is really causing the problem, right?
100%. Okay, so just going back to martial arts, and how have you seen that it can transform the mind, body, and spirit? We've spoken about the body quite a bit, but just if you can touch on how it transformed the mind and spirit.
Yeah, I'll take another example from martial arts, and I guess for this you'd have to have at least tried it, but you can also imagine it. Now, I used to, before I do what I do now with dads, I used to have a martial arts school in person, like my dad. My late dad was my first teacher, and he had the main school in the area growing up since the 1980s. So I started there like at 5, and then I was teaching since I was 10. So I've been in the game for a while. But what is really interesting is since then, and even up until when I had my school, is you would see people come in to learn martial arts. And some people would come in, and understandably, this is where they were at in their journey and on their path. And they would be practicing, but maybe they would be trying, and we take shadow boxing as an example, because it's a very hard skill that people find to pick up, but it's very valuable. They do the moves, but because they don't have the confidence and the energy and the intent behind them, they look very lackluster. They don't have any finesse, energy, power. And you look at it and you would think, well, this is not going to work. Now, that is partially because they are a beginner, but it's not just that. On the flip side, you might have someone else come in who is also a beginner, but because mentally they're more prepared, they're more confident, and they have a more of a go-getter attitude, shall we say, they come in, they do the moves. They may not be great moves, but you can see they're really trying and they're putting their all into it. So what you see is, when you actually look at people performing martial arts moves, it doesn't matter what the style is. It's, as Bruce Lee again said, it's like the energy that you put behind it. That's the most important thing. And as you put that energy into those reps, 1, 10, a million times and so on, you start to feel that transformation. And again, Bruce Lee said, you know, he doesn't fear the person or the man who has done 10,000 kicks once. He fears the one who has done one kick 10,000 times. So what does that mean? It's that, well, yes, in principle, you need to practice less, but to mastery or mastery level. But as an overarching concept, you also need to see how you can focus on mastering a few key things. Now, physically, the journey in martial arts starts with the techniques. Soon enough, depending on your receptiveness to the path, you realize that, oh, maybe I'm not being a student of the way, or I am, and here's what I need to change. And you tweak it, you change it, and you do it. And it's this iterative, constant iterative process in martial arts that helps you to really ground yourself, remain as humble as possible, and also continuously improve. And in essence, martial arts has really, my Wing Chun Sifu, I have to give him credit for this, Sifu Sam Catlin, a great man. And he said basically martial arts for him has three purposes. One, and he said also in this order, is self-development or improvement. And then also self-defense, of course. And then also self-actualization. So, of course, the development is self-explanatory, you're developing. The defense is also explanatory. If you need to use it, you can use it. And lastly, the actualization is the process of becoming or changing from who you are to becoming who you could potentially be.
A self-actualization, if you could elaborate a bit more on what exactly that is.
Yeah, so I'll give you some personal examples and also students. I've been doing martial arts for about 27 and a bit years now, since I was five, as I mentioned. And I would still consider myself, to be a beginner, especially in the arts that I'm not that good at. And for me, I have stopped and started the path of martial arts here and there, especially as a child and a little bit after I quit fighting and competing, because I lost my purpose and my identity. But what I found is that if you look at martial arts properly, it's actually much more a path to help you to grow as a person in very simple terms. And I use it really as a tool to help me to combat myself and my own demons, my own inner enemies, my own issues and so on. And I use it as a conduit to help me to stay on the correct path. And if I do that successfully and consistently enough, then I will be able to actualize whatever I want in life, whether it be for business, personal growth, family, and so on. And it's simply a tool. And it is a great tool. I've not come across really any other tools that have this level of impact, in my opinion. I've done lots of other, whether it be sports, other types of coaching, other types of programs, you know, all sorts of things. But this combination, which we could talk about as well, when I studied philosophy and married that up with martial arts, they're basically a match made in heaven for your, one for your body and mind and one for the mind.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you've done martial arts way longer than me, but I think for me, what I have learned, when you get punched in the face, then you humble down a bit, your ego sort of contracts, and it's painful, but it teaches you something, just to know when to speak, when not to speak, and sort of stay within your bounds, and also introspect a bit more. And when you introspect, that's really the starting point to when you grow and self-actualize, as you speak.
And that's a great point. It's really interesting hearing from your perspective, because you're obviously talking about these topics, but you're also understanding from a you know, you've only been doing martial arts for a few years, but it's enough. If you see, if you have the right mentality like you have, you can actually progress much faster than someone who doesn't. And I saw this time and time again. Someone, and they could have goals of transforming their body, getting in shape, and doing things like that, like many of the dads I work with. And, you know, being a martial artist is not their, shall we say, their priority. We're just using martial arts as one of the tools to get there. But like yourself, if you have the right mentality, you can progress extremely fast. And I saw this very often, and it led us to really restructure things. We thought, why is this person much faster at progressing than this person, even if the person who's doing it progressing slowly started much earlier? And it was all due to how they thought. And it was as simple as that, how they thought about the situations they were in, whether it be sparring, getting hit in the face, whether it was how hard they pushed themselves in the sessions, how open they were to receiving the lessons, the coaching, the philosophical lessons we shared as well. All it came down to is how receptive are they to learning and to change. So if you're receptive to that, you'll do really well, whether it be getting in shape or learning martial arts, whatever it is.
Being receptive to change is somewhat linked to what goals you have in life as well. So if you do have goals which you really want to achieve, you sort of become more receptive. Unless you're too much in a rush to achieve those goals, then you might not be as receptive to knowledge and information. This takes us on to the next topic. Where does lack of discipline really come from, and how does it change dads?
So where does a lack of discipline come from, and how does it change dads? This is a great question. I think it's very much a deep-rooted thing. You know, I've, to be clear, like I said, I've been very unhealthy, ill at times, to being athlete, fighter level. So I know both ends of the spectrum. And there have been times, excuse me, where I realize that that was my fault when I was like that. When I was in that position where I was ill, it was entirely my fault. It was because I was not disciplined with the things I needed in life. What happened was I let myself go. And that was my identity at that point. So my identity of Aiden 1.0 was resonant with the habits, the thoughts, the actions, and the behaviors that produced that state I was in. So really there's three things that we talk about quite a lot. It's your thoughts, your actions, and behaviors. And if you honestly analyze what those things are, you can dictate very simply whether or not you're disciplined or not. And this is where I find philosophy is so important, is that philosophy, as my professor told me very clearly, is like it teaches you how to think, not what to think. In school, you're told what to think. In philosophy, you're taught how to think. And this is where, as you were talking about the introspection, you need to have a conversation, an honest conversation with yourself as often as you need it, at least daily. Now, some people do this in the form of journaling. Some do things like meditation. Martial arts is also, I would say, a way to do that, albeit slightly indirectly. Now, if you're not having those conversations over a long enough period of time, then suddenly you become undisciplined. And many people, or many guys and many dads I work with, they focus on work for so long and things like that, just to put everything else to the side, that they don't realize 5, 10, 15, 20 years have gone by. And lo and behold, they're extremely undisciplined. So to say where it comes from is, I wouldn't say there's one exact source, but in essence, your thoughts, your actions and behaviors and the identity that you've built up, whether it be positive or negative or just what it is, and it's how those things shape who you are right now.
That makes sense. I've noticed in my own life that whenever my lack of discipline has usually come from my goals not being that clear, whenever I've had those phases in my life. And in those situations, what worked for me the best was, if I don't know my goals, I just go to the gym, start exercising, getting in physical shape, not thinking too much. And in doing so, then the thoughts and ideas sort of came and I could curate my goals for the future better. So when in doubt, just start exercising, running, or whatever you do. That has worked for me.
Do you find that worked for you even if you didn't have a direction, like just do something? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, just do something. Like, don't think. Just do something. Get the physical body in shape. So you start getting more insights, downloads, and intuition starts kicking in as well. And then the future goal starts taking shape. That's what has worked for me. But to answer the original question as to where the lack of discipline comes from, I think it's circular. So when the goals haven't been that clear for me in the past, that's when the lack of discipline sort of creeps in a little bit.
That's powerful. I can see that as well. And you may have done this as well. Sometimes, you know, you set, especially as guys, we're quite prone to this. Maybe you set goals which are too lofty and like, whether it be losing weight or whatever. Oh, I'm overweight massively and I want to drop 20 pounds in a month. All right, cool. It's possible. But then who are you going to become to do that? Because the person who's going to be able to do that has to be extremely disciplined and has to do a lot of work to do that as well. And like you said, it's, you know, sometimes your goals aren't in alignment with who you are, right?
100%.
I find that process is, going back to martial arts, you may relate to this as well, is that people need to enjoy that process more. You know, you need to enjoy being rubbish at something and being bad and being a beginner. In martial arts, some people call it the beginner's mindset or Shoshin. It's that, like that white belt mentality. Enjoy it and be a white belt and actually embrace that, because the more you have that childlike innocence to learn and to have that white belt mentality, and you just almost proudly wear a white belt wherever you go, even if it's just metaphorically in your head, just wear it and just be happy that you can learn from the most simple of scenarios and people. Like, for example, I live in Sri Lanka now, and most people here live an extremely simple life. And if I just go in with an open enough mind to any interaction with them, you can actually learn quite a lot from their situations. But they have much more simple lives than we do. So that's life. We can learn.
I was born in India and raised there for my first 6 years. I still have a patchy memory from up until the age of six before I moved to Sweden, where I grew up. So Sweden is really home for me. But growing up, we used to go to India intermittently, I'd say. And people there live such simple lives. And like the complications aren't there. We create so many complications in our lives here in the West, especially a city like London.
Yeah, you're right. You're saying you live right in the cities, which is a huge shift from India, right? So it's almost amazing. Like, you know, I'm here sometimes, and sometimes I catch myself being a little bit frustrated at certain things about how they're done here, because, you know, it's very, like, some would say backwards, slow, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Like, but then when you just realize, well, oh, I'm in Sri Lanka, just let it go. And you realize, okay, that's actually in some ways not better, but it just is what it is.
For sure. Cool. I want to move on to books. Now, you're an avid reader. What books would you recommend in the context of what we've been talking about? So transforming your mind, body, and spirit. It doesn't have to be martial arts related, but I do believe there are some very good books that have an undertone of martial arts. So yeah, over to you.
Definitely. No, great question. I'll recommend a few to not overload. One that we like to start our students with, because it's a very relatable book, it's called Be Like Water, based on the Bruce Lee concept. It's by a guy called Joseph Cardillo, if I said that right. It's a very great book because it shows you how you can use the lessons learned from martial arts and apply them to everyday life. So there are some practical physical exercises in there, like, say, some Qigong routines and things like that, or simple exercises. But then there's also the application of understanding. For example, how can I channel my energy and aggression positively into my, not only movements, but into my day-to-day life as well. And that's the great parallel between something like martial arts and life. So that's a great book. I'd recommend that as a great place for people to understand the power of martial arts, but also how they can apply it day-to-day. It's a little bit more esoteric and like a little bit more strategic. Many people will have heard of it, whether or not they've read it. Sun Tzu's Art of War, I would say, is an incredible book that is well worth just having around and just picking up and reading a bit and just revisiting it from time to time.
It's a small book, but very powerful. It's usually the small books that have the most profound impact on how you think.
Yeah, I take it you've read it, right?
I have.
It's an amazing book. And, you know, it's something, sometimes you stare at that page for a while and it's like, there's only a few lines on there. But you have to read it a few times to really get it into your head. But in essence, it's all about strategy and understanding, and many people have applied this in the business world, personal development space, and also just general life. But one of the greatest things I love about that book is his emphasis on strategy personally, but also when it comes to things like war and battlefield, which is what it is primarily or originally about. But what I really like is how he really emphasizes that we need to just focus on almost fighting without fighting. And he says, I can't remember the exact phrase, but something akin to the best, you know, martial artists are the ones who win the fight before it even gets fought. And if you can do that, well, of course you can apply that to everything, right? How can you effectively work? Nowadays it's called something like, how can you work smart and not hard, which is effectively the same thing. So that's another one. One I was talking to you about, I think before we connected, or as we were connecting, was a King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. And it's all about these four main archetypes that men nowadays have lost and we need to rekindle. And it's an amazing, one of the most amazing books I've read recently on men and masculinity and how we can redevelop those lost archetypes that, when you combine them together, they effectively argue make the ultimate man. So the warrior is a lot about what we've been talking today, you know, someone who's an action taker, who's able to get things done, protect and provide. And the lover is, you know, someone who sees the goodness in all things and how things are all interconnected. The magician is someone who can create situations, who can merge the greatness of things together to bring amazing scenarios about. And then what's the other one? The king is the initial one. Who is able to create, and they talk about generativity in there a lot, which is about how can you generate things and create things as a king archetype. So that's a great book. I would highly recommend that too.
Funnily enough, my Krav Maga instructor also recommended that book, so I definitely have to read it. So whenever I get a book recommendation by at least two people for the same book, then that means, okay, I have to prioritize that book and read that. So I think that's going to be my next book. Just going back on that book, would you say that King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, all men go through each of those phases throughout their lives? Or is it more that a man is one of those archetypes?
Yeah, that's a good question. They talk about it a lot in the book. I think the idea is that the optimal ideal man has a combination of all four of those things. And it's not necessarily the case that they operate independently. It's more about these are archetypes which are deep within us that we need to activate and stay on top of to and cultivate it to make sure it's a constant in our lives. And within each of those, I don't remember all the sub variations, but they have an active and a passive pole. So for example, in the King, I can't remember which way around it is, but they talk about how, you know, they have these funny names. They have the high chair tyrant, and they talk about how, you know, like maybe my son who's three, if you're of that age, you know, you're sitting in your high chair, you're demanding what you want. These are how sometimes these behaviors manifest. So for example, if you're not operating as the ideal man, as that King, containing that King archetype, you will have one of those shadow poles that they reference. And sometimes that can be the high chair tyrant. And they talk about how people who are in positions of power but aren't really entitled to them or haven't really been bestowed them honorably, shall we say, like our governments and so on, they end up operating from this high chair tyrant like mentality. So it's a really good way to look at the world around you and the men in the world and how they are within these four archetypes as well.
Fantastic. I'll link the names of the books in the description below.
Thank you. Whilst we're here, do you have any good books that, even if it's just one or so, that you'd recommend?
In the context of transforming your mind, body and spirit, one of the best books I've read is The Way of the Superior Man by David Deida. I've read that a few times, but first time I picked it up was some years back after a breakup. So I was in this very sensitive stage and I picked up that book or audiobook and everything fell into place. Like, okay, the reason the relationship broke up was because of me. You have to respect the difference between masculine and feminine energies. So that changed me a lot. And another book in that same context is the Bhagavad Gita, which is it's read by most Hindus. It's not a religious book per se, but it's a very important book to Hindus and Sikhs as well. And it's kind of linked to some extent with Sun Tzu's Art of War. The philosophy is very much about getting the emotions out and just performing your duty for the sake of duty without any expectation of the results. You getting the results or getting the reward is actually not your problem. Those are the ones I can think of right now.
I've not actually read. Did you say the Bhagavad Gita? Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, I've heard many times about it, but not read it. But The Way of the Superior Man is an amazing book, for sure.
For sure. These are two books that I can think of in the context of what we've been talking about so far.
Awesome. Now, you've inspired me to read the Bhagavad Gita one day. So.
Yeah, it's not a religious book. I mean, I know religious people will read that book, but it doesn't tell you to follow any religion or anything. It's more about how to think, how to be focused in what you're doing without the emotions. So I think it's universal. Cool. Thanks for that, Aiden. And we've reached the end of the episode. What takeaways would you give my listeners? You've given one so far, and that is to do a time audit in your 24 hours. So how do you spend your 24 hours?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to understand how you're spending your time. And you have to be honest with that and actually track it and look at it and, you know, see where you're at. I can give an addendum to that if you like. What I tend to do with students after that, we have a template which I can give to your listeners as well. But basically what happens is after that, I tend to analyze and say, all right, well, here's your current schedule. Then what's your ideal schedule? Then we go, we discuss, and then they come back with a version of their ideal schedule. And then we look at that together and optimize it. So you should create your current one and then create your ideal one off the back of that. Because of course, currently, if you're not in shape, you're not physically, mentally, spiritually aligned to who you can and want to be, then of course there are some things in your day-to-day which are not matching up. So we need to be honest with where we're at and then take the ideal one and map that out. And at first, it's not going to be perfect. It's not going to work. It will take time. There will be mess ups along the way. But then that's what we have to work towards. And then another takeaway I would say is that, especially in relation to how I help people, is if you're a guy or dad looking to get into shape, and especially if you are more in this midlife stage of your life, think, just like we talked about with some of the books like Art of War and even the concept of martial arts and so on, think more strategically. You have to have a strategic plan in place, which will basically make it a fail-proof strategy. You don't want to be employing a strategy which is going to fail time and time again and be yo-yoing, because if you're at midlife now, you've probably tried that and done that many a times. So now you want something which is basically 100% guaranteed, as long as you do the work and your understanding of what the steps are you need to take on that path. I think too many of us in life just jump into things and we don't take a moment to think and say, well, all right, is this what I want? And is this what I'm also willing to do? Answer those two simple questions and you should be well on your way.
Fantastic, Aidan. Thanks for that. And where can people find you?
Sure. I would like to offer your guys a valuable training I've just put together. So it helps you to discover the 5 ways to train smarter so you can maximize muscle building with the right 30-minute workouts. And it's a really simple training I've put together. So you can just go to my website. It's fitroots.co.uk/train-smart. So that's fitroots.co.uk/train-smart.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. I'll link that in the description below.
Thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure to be here and I'm excited to see how the Midlife Masculine grows. So if you're listening to this, please do what you can to support Drew and his show. I think he's got an incredible thing going on here.
Thanks for that, Aidan. Really appreciate it. With that, Aidan, thank you very much. It's been very insightful.
No, thank you, man. Hope you enjoyed it. How did you find it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. I think we could have talked about so many more things. We could have dug a bit deeper into the books, some of the books that you talked about, especially Be Like Water. There was so much to talk about. You're a very well-read person. And although this is an audio podcast, we're looking at each other via the webcam, you're a very calm person. You're very zen. So I can see you being a very good teacher to other men who want to have a zen-like lifestyle as well.
No, thank you. And you're blessed with what you do. You're actually a really good host. You're very calming. So maybe that helped me to be nice and relaxed. And you tried to bring out the best in your guests. So I can see that the line of questioning you have is very natural, but it also makes for a good conversation. So I just want to say thanks as well, because I think you have a great concept for a show. And I know it's quite new, but yeah, definitely don't give up, because you can really do well with what you're doing. And
appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words, Aidan. If you like this episode, then make sure to like, share, subscribe, and leave a review. That will help me get to people just like you. Also, make sure to visit mlmpod.info. Keep acquiring knowledge, and I'll see you in the next episode.